Welcome to Switched Off Book. Woo! I'm songwriter Charlie Harding.
And I'm musicologist Nate Sloan.
And I'm person Jess McKenna.
And I'm human, question mark? Zach Reno.
I'll have to get to the bottom of that.
I'll never tell.
This is a really fun mashup of two different podcasts.
Right, what are we calling it?
Switched off pop.
Switched off book.
Yeah. So pop. We make a show called Switched On Pop, where we break down the making and meaning of popular music. And we overwhelmingly admire what you do on Off Book.
We make a completely improvised musical podcast with
that laughs in the face of music.
Yeah. We've also got King of Pianists, Pianist of Kings, Scott Passarella, making everything up. We got Brett on the frets, who is our guitar player and also our engineer.
We got producer Dana Wickens, Wicks on the Sticks, producer and drummer, and Dana. And we have your lovely producer Megan joining us. Yeah. We have Shannon from Earwolf. We have a whole team making this happen, and it's really exciting.
Okay, so I wanted to do this because I embarrassingly know almost nothing about musicals, and my job is to like break down music.
Yes.
And Nate has written a couple of musicals.
It's true.
He does not improvise them.
No.
You improvise musicals.
Yes.
And it is probably the most stunning thing that I have ever heard.
Oh wow.
It wows me every time, really. The wow is appropriate. And what I wanted to do today was, I was hoping that you would teach me about the fundamental form of a musical. We have an amazing band here.
Yes.
We could break down some of the music that's happening, which is what Nate and I do. Mm-hmm. And I also really want to learn about how it is that you do what you do. I want to know about the magic. I want to break it down.
Great. We go now to the inside of me and Zach's brain. And this is a classic opening number. Yeah. So
the purpose of this is not even so much to introduce characters as much as it is to set the world and the tone of the thing.
That's right.
We might meet characters that are important here, but we might not. But Scott is giving us a sort of like musical landscape here.
And also, so he's playing with us. If you're familiar with improv terms, we are going to yes and. We're going to say yes to what he's giving us, which is like, we gave him brains. Mm. This is what he chose. And we're like, that's great.
And I'm like, neurons firing.
Yeah. Right. I'm not thinking about like chaos. It doesn't feel like the inside out brain. It feels more like a space brain. Where are we? What is this? How do we make up spontaneous music? Well, over here, if you can follow my lead, I'll take you to areas I can access with speed. This is an opening.
Because we had some of the background set, but now at the end of this breath, I'll say, oh, look, neurons are firing, really paint the picture of a brain. And because Jessica knows song structure, she knows the next part is insane. We go back to the
already explored the things that we said about the inside of a head.
For example, now we're outside of the head and we're going to meet the man. Who is this man? Of course, his name is Stan. He's a doctor, he's a neurosurgeon, he's a man whose job is to look at brains.
But we're looking at his brain and now we'll follow his journey, yes, but we don't get details just
in
yet.
Opening number,
key change,
because it's more exciting. Opening number, if you never ever change the key, that would be such a bummer, but we did, because
this
front.
I don't know what we have to add. That was all. That was such a beautiful meta musical. So what, Charlie? What do we want to isolate from the opening number of the musical? I mean, we're tutoring you here. So,
well, I feel like what I've just found is that I've been launched into a world. It's exciting. It's energized. Like I'm ready to keep moving, and I want to know what happens next.
Yeah. So without knowing a lot of musical theater, yeah. I mean, I think great musicals. You know, maybe you meet Jean Valjean at the end. Of the opening number.
Mostly you're just seeing a bunch of people in a prison camp. You're like, okay, this is France.
Right.
Okay, some people are in jail.
Right. The opening number of Company is them all talking about Bobby, and then you don't meet Bobby till the end. So
the opening number of Oklahoma is just a guy being like, the sun is nice and corn is good.
I'm trying to think other like classic opening numbers. But you know, that's something that Zach and I are, we're not inventing a form. Like there's a lot of roadmap there for us. Huh. And we know that an opening number, especially for us, we have this additional thing that's happening where we're bringing a guest along,
right,
who maybe has less of a familiarity than we do.
Yeah.
And so that's like a first number to be like, there's really no stress yet about plot. We're just going to like explore the world, get on the same page about tone, the who, what, where, what kind of story are we dealing with?
We can really also only have that flexibility because Scott and the band are also so flexible, because there is a song structure, but Jess and I break that structure all the time, and a guest often comes in not knowing that structure. Mm. So if I've just finished a verse and Scott is like, clearly building back up to the chorus, and then, no, I'm doing a verse, and I'm the guest, and I'm new, and I thought that a verse was a thing to do, like, he'll just go back and do that again, and then he'll do the chorus later, because who cares? We're only going to do it once.
Right,
it
doesn't exactly. Have to, we don't burden the guest with, like, here's a pamphlet before you start about like all the things to remember. We're like, come be out of your comfort zone with us. We'll take care of you. So that's outside of like just a musical structure, something that we're thinking about.
And I tell this to new musical improvisers all the time. Like structure is there, like study it, learn it. It will help you. And then when you're doing a show, throw it away because it's not the most important part of what your brain is doing.
I feel like I've never been more prepared for a modulation in my life than what just happened.
Yeah.
Like you are all, how often do we get a modulation up a key in the opening number? I feel like you raised the stakes
Scott, speak to it.
Oh, by the way, guys, we got Scott on the mic.
We've given
the thing we swore we'd never do.
Oh God, it's happening. I would say it's maybe like 1 out of 20, very rarely. Okay. It's mostly I know this is going to mess with them. At this point, I only do it at the least opportune times, which I really need to stop doing.
No, not at all. I feel like I don't want to speak for you, but it's also the fact that we were doing that without a guest.
Oh, yeah. If there had been a guest, I would certainly not do that to them. That would be cruel and heartless.
But to just us, it's fun. Like, we expect that.
Plus, I figured if we're hitting opening number, like, let's grab as many of those tropes as we can at once. Yes. Yeah.
So what happens after an opening number? Where do we go?
Oh, okay, great.
Barbara, do you have the charts for the person in room 33?
Yeah, of course, I do, Doctor.
I say person. I should know his name. I'm having a
day. Dr. Sutton, it's just on the top there.
Oh, gosh, Barbara.
Are you all right?
Yeah. Did I write down Trey? T-R-A-Y? Is this man's name Trey, or did I do that wrong?
T-R-A-Y? You maybe were just thinking about lunch? His name is printed at the top. You know, the nurse, we do this for you. So maybe you were just hungry.
I mean, I might as well be.
His name is Bryce Tanner.
Bryce Tanner. I could have sworn his name was Trey. I'm starving. Can we get food?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. This is my 26th hour of what was supposed to be a 14-hour shift.
Dr. Sutton.
People keep getting, I need brain surgery now. And normally it's the sort of thing you plan out in advance, but I kept getting person after person of needing brain surgery now.
Dr. Sutton, us hardworking folks in the healthcare industry, you know, we take care of a lot of people, but are you taking care of yourself?
What do you mean?
Who's tending to you, Dr. Sutton? Who's asking you the questions? How do you feel? Who's asking after you, Dr. Sutton? On the pain scale of 1 to 10, is this real? Who's taking into account how you are doing and wondering if you have had some food? I might be overstepping, but I just want to say, take care of yourself, it's true.
Who doctors? The doctors. Who doctors? The people who wear the lab coat. like there are so many people coming in, and all of them patients. But when it takes time, taking time for myself is something for which I have no patience. Getting up every day and saving other people's lives, I don't have time to sit, or have time to sleep, or have time to steam delicious rice.
Ooh,
just steamed rice on my brain. Who doctors? Who doctors? The doctors. I have to eat right now. Walk with me. I'm going insane.
It starts with taking a time, a deep breath. You know you have much with what you grapple, but why not start with this? Give your body some energy. Start with that, something simple and small, to care for yourself better so you can care for us all.
Barbara, you just doctored a doctor. Even though you are a nurse, you're a doctor to me.
Thank you.
You just doctored a doctor. But I cannot stress enough, you're not a doctor technically.
Yeah, no, I understand. It's something more schooling, but I prefer the path that's so much more hands-on. Not getting lost in my schooling, but don't get me wrong, I know we need you, doctor.
And we need you, nurse.
We need all of us, or else the world would be so much worse.
Taking my lunch, and I'm taking this apple, and I'm gonna get some steamed rice.
Take care.
So what do we call that section of the musical?
So that I think it's sort of an I Want song. I think we get the suggestion of the central problem character. We're maybe from here going to further explore that this doctor who doesn't know how to have self-care.
Yeah, this doctor, at the end of the song, it's like, okay, he's going to start taking care of himself. Yeah.
Right.
He's definitely not going to do it right the first time he tries.
He's going to need people to help him on this path.
Or we would, if we were just following him, there's a couple ways that we sometimes, I mean, there's infinite ways that we go about this, but the other thing that could happen is we might introduce someone right now who is directly in the way of what this doctor is trying to accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
And it might be himself, he might just be bad at it, or we might like throw a villain in there. It really depends on the story.
Mm-hmm.
There's no sort of right or wrong way to go about it. Yeah. It's just kind of what we want to do.
Yeah. Fairly soon we'll throw an obstacle, but also, you know, we're also a comedy podcast. Yeah. So I feel like we're also leaning into like, okay, he's going to doctor the doctor, and this is going to be a song about not eating rice. We're going to give it the high stakes of part of your world. Like, but it's maybe not actually.
And then we're just going to list professions for a while.
So this is great. The opening number kind of brings you into the world, gets you hopped up and energized.
Yes.
And then the next song, maybe the I Want song, kind of establishes the stakes a little. So now we're like, all right, we're invested. What's going to go down here?
And it's our first suggestion of who probably the protagonist is, or our first protagonist. If this could still morph into somewhat of an ensemble story.
Sure. Especially because this I Want song is not super clearly saying like, here is the clear trajectory of this man.
Right.
So can we shine our musicological spotlight on something now? Because something that really struck me about the opening of that song was the vamp Like,
ooh,
what is a vamp? And can I get a vamp right now, actually? And how does it have this ability to make whatever you're saying sound somehow incredibly interesting and like it's going to lead to something extraordinarily profound? Except this isn't, because I
you know, it's music, so it's interesting. And if I say it slow enough with music behind it, what an interesting thing.
But really, I'm buying time until I can find a rhyme. And maybe it's spoken. Maybe I don't sing yet because we're still deciding whose song this is. Like, if we have a scene between the doctor and the nurse, well, which of us is going to take the first verse? Okay, it's the nurse, so she's playing.
Yeah, so...
So that's amazing. So like,
vamps are great.
This is such, and this is like a kind of a unique thing about musicals. The vamp. Like you don't. This isn't something we encounter so much in pop music. I think it's right because it's like for the stage, and it's for, and yeah, it gives you that flexibility, and it can be as long or short as you want.
If you're a musical that is not sung through or doesn't have music throughout, like in like Hamilton or Rent or Les Mis, the music never stops.
Right.
But if you're a more traditional book music musical, I think you need that adjustment period for the audience so that it's less jarring.
Right.
That people are suddenly singing. You know, like in West Side Story, it's like we got to whistle and snap over Vamp, and we have to go like, "Hey, you!" before we really like get into.
Oh, that's interesting.
because even musicals that have like are sung through do their version of stalling, like. Phantom of the Opera has sections where like, Christine, it's recitative and it's basically one note, and I might as well be talking, but because no one has just talked in this musical, this is the way we're going to do it, Christine.
Yeah.
Like that's like, but it's basically it's serving the same purpose.
Yes,
Les Mis is a little differently where, but there's a similar like. We are just shouting at each other from across the room.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
No, I guess. So, because singing, going from talking to singing is inherently unnatural. And so the vamp provides the bridge for you to get to that, like, place of heightened emotion.
Right. It's helping you suspend your disbelief that music can just happen in this world first. And you're like, okay. And now they're going to sing what they were once saying. And the very, like, emotional and glib thing that people say is, in musicals, people sing when words are no longer enough. Which, when I used to say that in college, I'd be like, right? And now I'm like, ew, a little bit.
The other one that I remember, this just reminded me of, I don't know if this is apropos, but we're talking about, but it's like, when people are in love, they sing. Mm-hmm. When people are making love, they dance.
Oh, that's great. But it is supposed to be like something heightened, right? Just something heightened is happening. That's why we're singing. Even in a something where the music doesn't stop, there, it is going to shift when, like in Hamilton, Byrne feels a lot different than them like rapping about like before the story of tonight. Like it feels different. It feels more like a standalone song, even in a show that the music doesn't stop.
And if I can go like super chord nerd for a minute, like a vamp is this awesome, like just do this for as long as you need to, and like usually with like a pop song, it'll be like. And go right now. And
which is great for me because keep in mind, if we're improvising, like we don't know what key Scott is playing is or where he's going. Right. It's really nice to hear something for a second before you dive in.
Right.
It's really hard for Scott to play and me to sing at the same time.
Right.
Yeah.
So the simpler the vamp, the better.
Yeah. I lean on this, the sustained chord. You know, it could be real great for the guests to come in on any beat, and now that's the one.
Exactly.
Cool. Vamp. I want to know where that word comes from now. I actually have no idea.
Oh. Hmm.
Anybody?
I thought that, well, vampires. No. I was going to take like a wild swing that it's like.
It's an Italian word. Well, all
it,
of them
isn't
are.
It no, a, isn't it a, like, isn't a vamp kind of like a saucy woman?
Yeah,
and is a vamp like laying on top of a piano like, hey, everybody, thanks for coming out to the show. Hey, we got a great show for you lined up.
Hard-hearted Hannah, the vamp of Savannah, PA.
Yeah, what?
Is that a song? No. Hard-hearted.
It's a working something. Hypothesis.
That's my current hypothesis.
We'll hit that.
It's a saucy lady laying on a piano.
That sounds right.
Who needs the underscore to be like, what a marvelous show, what a glorious time to be alive. Oh, back when I was just a little girl, I used to sit by my mama's knee. You know that thing where I'd be like old-timey cabaret singers used to go from like, and my mother would say, you need to shuck those peas before you come in here, Victoria. Peas, but honestly, who eats peas anymore? Like, I feel like that's vamping.
Yeah,
it could be like a vaudevillian thing. I feel like so much goes back to vaudeville.
I'm buying.
The important thing is that there's no way to know.
So that was encyclopedic. Should we move on? What comes after?
I'm just curious. I feel like we've had this great opening number, which made me really excited, and I like learned about somebody, and then I learned a little bit more about them, but like all the music has been like very uplifting so far. I'm wondering, do you think about this? Is the music going to shift from here? Where do we go?
So, right. Great. Okay. And no, we do not have enough money for this. We do not have enough money for this. We do not have enough money for
Hospital
this.
Hospital Director Klein. Yeah. Do you mind if I come into your office?
Well, you're already in here, aren't you, Curtis?
Yes, I've been sleeping in the corner because you said there's not enough money for you to go home.
There's not enough money for you to
go
home,
Curtis. I wasn't sure exactly what that meant, but you're the boss, so I followed you.
Well, I'm just in here slashing things from the hospital's budget.
Yes, most of the rooms are now closed and we're using them as escape rooms. We're renting them out to other people.
Good. Yes, that's what I want.
I know that this is all about making money, and I know that since the doctor here is refusing to charge exorbitant prices for his brain surgery.
Sort of New Amsterdam bullshit. I will not have it, Curtis. I will stop that Dr. Sutton if it's the last thing I do.
But Hospital Director Klein, he's helping so many people. Aren't you worried?
What's helping people more than an escape room? It's escapism, and it's puzzles, and you maybe learn something, and you work on collaboration.
And it's a room.
Yes, Curtis, it is a room. Oh, I'm in a room with a series of riddles and tasks. What do I do next is the question I ask. Do I unlock this? Are these numbers significant? Do any of these things lead to me being triumphant? I will get to the top of the heap, and I won't let anyone stop me. You will help, 'cause I can't afford to not have you help.
Person that sits inside the room, you don't know if they're a part of it or not.
Yes!
They answer questions, but only danger questions, like you're touching something live and it might be hot. They say, don't touch that, it's not part of the room.
Yes.
But you touch it anyway. And then you get thrown out and you never know how the room ends. It's the experience that I had. You
know what? What is care if I don't care?
And what is the room if there's no one in there? And how do you escape when you're chased by a bear?
And what is this and what is why? Why do we do anything? Why do we try? Nothing matters, so why must I care? And what will you do if you're chased by a bear?
Big old scare, and no one can
have the funding for all the rooms?
Go back to that corner, Curtis.
Do you want us to keep going or you want to jump in? I forgot we were just doing this more through. Or
you know, the thing is itself. Whatever,
the thing.
There's a quote there.
Yeah. What is the thing itself?
I just mean, this is now I feel the form, we so we don't need to fight it.
Yeah, this is what it is.
Wow.
So that was the villain's entrance.
Sounded
was,
like it. Yeah.
What do we have? We have a minor key, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. That seems necessary. And also kind of like a jazzy vibe.
Yeah. Jazz is evil is the thing that we're trying to tell everyone.
I think we lean into the tropes of your more like cartoony villains more often on off books. So that means that we're going to play with tropes like a Captain Hook, a Tarantella, a Tango, like these big style choices that keep the villains like playful and fun, much more Ursula, you know, poor unfortunate souls, those kind of
we got to get
histories.
More Tarantellas going. Yeah. So, such a good villain song.
To sit in here in a room quite clear.
Yeah.
One of the things I notice in your song structure is it's just so different than pop music, which is sort of that's where we sit, is that verses and choruses actually progress. Like you take us somewhere as the song goes on. And we've talked to a lot of songwriters on our show where they'll do a songwriting session, it lasts all day, and then they're like, oh shoot, we forgot a bridge. And then people are like, should we write a bridge? Bridge? Nah, this is no new bridge. No bridge. We don't need a bridge. Or like, okay, fine, we'll put together a bridge, whatever. And I feel like you're taking it like the first chorus, second chorus, and third chorus are never the same. They're moving forward.
So this is a thing about comedy specifically. So Jess has a really good play on words there with that chorus, right? No one can escape
my doom.
We're clearly making like an escape room pun. But which is like maybe funny the first time you hear it a chorus. And if it's a pop song, it just has to be catchy when you hear it every time.
Yeah.
If it's a joke, you have to change it because no one is going to laugh at that chorus the third time they hear it. Now, you don't have to,
right,
but you have the option to.
Right. So we lean on that a lot, especially in a four-line chorus, that third line making it mutable. Or he's like inserting bonus jokes is like an echo thing. But I think because half of this is musical theater trope where, yes, there is plot movement and there's character development. And that's part of the progression of musical theater where it started, where songs used to just be like, let's put the pop songs of the day in a show and let's have that singing be like, there is a vamp singing. There is like a cabaret singer is singing the song. So the music happens in the world. And then when we transition to the Tin Pan Alley musicals and like Rodgers and Hammerstein, that's when we get into like this, we end the song different than where we started it. Mm. Either plot, character development, character owning a want, or characters falling in love. Something is different when we end the song. Yeah. And then for the comedy side of us, we want to make sure it's funny throughout. Mm-hmm. And we're not just relying on the same pattern, but we're playing with pattern and heightening
for it. For sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, even musicals, like traditionally, for a very long time, action stops when the song starts.
Right.
Until like Sondheim ish. No,
I think
I don't think so.
Yeah, I think Oklahoma is
Rent and Hamilton do like more of the opera thing where it's like moving along and singing the plot, but like a lot of it's just like, hey, we're doing stuff and now let's talk about how we're in love for 3 minutes.
Mm. Yeah,
but we are more in love at the end of the song.
I guess
than we started.
I know I'm thinking of the other delineation, which is into like quote unquote modern musical theater, but yes, Oklahoma is when that shift happens, which is like the. Was taught to me as golden age musical theater, which is, I think, an arbitrary label. But
I think, Sondheim then pushes that even further. We're like, we're now densely packing lyrically. And from now on, like, if you aren't paying attention to the lyrics, you might miss significant plot points. Yeah. Not just like, hey, I think this girl wishes she could escape her humdrum life. I know she wants to escape her humdrum life. Like that plot movement is character based and emotional based, and then we move into like, oh, and here's like how she's gonna do it, and here's like all the reasons why, and here's like the people in her life who will help her. You know, like we've moved that needle forward more and more forward.
I mean, that's right. It's so pop form is more like a circle, and musical theater form is more like an arc or something or an arrow. Right. You end somewhere different than you began.
It's like a staircase.
A staircase.
Because often I think a chorus in not comedy songs is the reset.
Yeah.
It's the restating of the thesis. You're not necessarily getting new information. Mm. So it's the time for like us to come back as a performer and an audience member to be like, right, that's still the main idea. Yeah. It's not like, look at this stuff. Isn't it neat? It's part of your world. which is just a really great want song.
I think it's like an escalator because it's a staircase that all moves.
It's like, I wonder if that's the reason why you don't really hear, I mean, with few exceptions, you don't hear a lot of musical theater songs cross into the pop sphere. You don't turn on, you know, the radio and hear, unless you're listening to like, you know, the musical station on Sirius or whatever. Like,
and even like Greatest Showman, which is like not super like, the music isn't modern-ish, but you could hear like it is modern influenced. You would be like, something about it being on the radio would make you think this.
I think that one song, at least people like performed it on The Voice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They have
Dana on the mic.
Dana on the mic now.
Pink did, they did like those, like the remixed yes, or like remastered, that's whatever they were called. Whatever. But those Greatest Showman songs, I've heard at least three on the radio, like consistently. They're not the.
On non-musical radio.
On non-musical radio, for sure. I listen to the radio a lot.
This is a big reveal.
Dana hearts radio.
The radio. I heart radio, but I don't heart iHeartRadio. no, but yeah, they're all on there. But I mean, it's anybody listening, I don't think, would assume that it's from that show, but it is. So yeah, it's kind of neat that it kind of like sneaks in.
But there wasn't like even though it was everywhere and massive, it was not like there was a song from Hamilton that was on the radio. Yeah.
No. Yeah.
And even like, I feel like Defying Gravity made it into the zeitgeist, but not because it was on the radio.
Right.
Like,
you
I
would hear like, it before movies played in movie theaters yeah, while people were loading in.
Like, I feel like Let It Go from Frozen maybe got like fairly close, but.
We've talked about this. Because of the nature of musical production, it takes years for musicals to get made. Right. Your very current sounding song by the time your musical comes out is 3 years old.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And I feel like maybe this is just because I'm getting older and you can speak to this, but I feel like pop music moves at like a wild rate now. Like I can't keep track of what they're doing.
Jessica just put on a hairnet, by the way.
Curly. It is one of the fastest moving art forms. Like that and internet memes is probably the only thing that moves fast. but yeah, it's like I feel like if I haven't listened to New Music Friday, where all the releases come out every single week, I'm behind.
Yeah. I feel, and it's at a rate now where I'm a little like, throwing my hands up because I can't do it. And I feel like I'm not on the pulse enough, you know, as someone who doesn't really listen to the radio. All my music comes to me like chosen.
Whereas musical theater, I mean, even that song we just heard, the Escape Room, is like reaching back to these older styles. It's like that's such a part of the sound.
Yeah, you're setting everything up for me. Like, I'm totally just game to go along for your ride. And the whole song functions totally differently. Like, I'm not supposed to sing along in the chorus unless I'm your guest. And I'm your guest, but I'm not singing along because I'm not a comic guest and I can't do what you do. but it's like I'm just game to listen through the chorus and it like there's enough that I know where the melody is going to go, but I have no idea where the story is going to go. And that's a totally different function than if I'm at a Taylor Swift concert where my job is to sing during the chorus. You don't want people singing during the Broadway musical.
Right, exactly. Yes. Not on their first listen. Exactly. You want them to be paying attention and like getting every beat.
Yeah.
Well, I wonder, okay. I wonder if we could try to lean poppier musically and what that, I mean.
Feels like your job.
Yeah.
Yeah. Band.
I feel like, you know, one of the things that because we're improvising it and that's hard, you know, we give ourselves as many legs up as possible. So that the fact that Zach and I grew up doing musicals, that means that that's probably going to be the kind of source material for a lot of stuff. But hopefully our music gets other influences.
For sure. Scott is also playing on a piano, traditionally a piano-ish instrument. Mm. But like, yeah. So, what were we doing in the story? It's been so long.
Okay. mountain pass I've walked before. These lonely 24-hour nights.
Am I missing something? Am I missing something? I think I'm missing something in my. I was before, and I left my apple core, and now I'm here inside the cafeteria and thinking, but something is missing. I've forgotten why I'm here. Oh no, I remember, it's 'cause I was hungry, but there's something else. I wish it was clear. Am I missing something?
Am I missing something?
I think I'm missing
I have to say, there was one of my most favorite musical features in that song.
Ooh.
That, clearly, you really thought about this very deeply. In your chorus, Am I Missing Something? You start late. And we call that text painting.
Ooh.
Right? Where the text lines up with what's happening in the music. And I'm almost like, I caught my breath and I was like, oh my gosh, is that going to be there on time? And then, Am I Missing Something? And the music and the words perfectly match.
Good job, Zach.
Yeah, planned. No, I mean, well it's so great.
Yeah, I will just say, like, structurally, I feel like, okay, I can tell just by, and this is also just like, now we're going to dip into improv language. I can tell by his physical presence he wants to add to this song. Because mm-hmm. I'm thinking it can just be this nurse by herself. Mm-hmm. So then I am starting to get the sense that maybe he wants into it, which is why I make the choice to double up on a verse instead of adding a chorus, because I'm like, okay, well, maybe we're just going to almost, we're going to duet this, but they're going to be in separate spaces. So maybe I'll let him, maybe we'll get to a chorus so late, I'll let him set maybe a one verse, because I've already done two, so this is getting pretty long. And then we'll meet on a chorus once I know how he's feeling. Mm. But that's also just like the improv world of me seeing, oh, he wants in this song. Okay, great. Be in this song. That means I'm not going to set a chorus yet because I don't know what your move is.
He's just jealous and he wants to sing.
Yeah. Which I should know.
Yeah.
Are you cueing Scott to give you a second verse?
No.
I mean, she is not like with her hands or body or anything, but like by the musical choice she's making, I'm like, you're aiming to do a verse. Why would you choose to do a chorus that way? Like, it's sort of that thing of like, once you've heard 1,000 musicals, you kind of have a template.
Yeah. And I almost backed myself into a tagline structure, which we don't almost ever do,
which is why
is what I abandoned because he made a verse,
which is why I came in, because I was like, we're doing a traditional pop song. Yeah.
There's probably no tagline.
Probably a chorus. Mm-hmm. But tagline songs are hard.
Well, they're hard because like I feel like we find choruses more satisfying. And for our...
Wait, what do we mean by a tagline?
So tagline is no chorus. That's like Somewhere over the rainbow. I did it my way.
Yeah.
New York.
So these are like AABA songs.
Yeah, yeah. Cool.
Oh, yeah.
And in the more abstract, it's just a... You sing a verse and you either begin it the same every time or you end it the same every time. And that's the only sort of repeating.
Right.
Yeah, and I feel like Zach and I land because of trying to like set up rhymes for ourselves or rhymes for each other or rhymes for a guest. We set up sometimes this world where we sing verses that have a lot of parallelism but aren't taglines. Like I was doing it in that song where I was like, and I'm walking, and da-da-da-da, and I'm kind of saying the same kind of line again. Like I'm giving myself something that is like an approximation of a tagline, only to then be like, never mind, it's a chorus.
You're either going to be like, da-da-da-da-da, or you're going to go, da-da-da-da-da, and then I'll be like, okay, one or the other.
Exactly.
We're done or not. Yeah.
So it's these subtle cues that you've done for enough times that you know exactly where they're going.
Well, like music has done, like, too. Like, sure. We're just ripping.
It's, I mean, like, a lot of what we do, because we have studied some music theory between the two of us, but it's mostly very intuitive.
Right.
It's mostly kind of like, Scott, play something. Like, you can tell the vibe of, like, you can have not studied music at all. You don't know whether he's playing, like, you don't know what major chords are. You don't know what minor chords are. You know what the emotional sort of impact of this song is.
You even know what, if you're thinking of a musical, you know, like, this feels like a sunny spring morning, maybe after a fight where people are trying to see a brand new day. You know, like, you start to see visuals. I see a rowboat and a family of little ducks. Why did I say too much last night? Oh, what the fuck? The classic setup of that rhyme where you have to end on the joke. But yeah, you start to see pictures also of where you want to set where we are. Yeah. And then because we were trying to give ourselves the challenge of making that sound more poppy, I was like, this bridge, the nurse is just going to say, she's going to be like emotional high. She's going to say like one word.
Yeah.
It's not going to matter. It's going to be more about like her emotional like explosion of being lonely at night and saying like, oh, it's night. Not like, I need this information to matter.
Yeah. Which is also great when you have two people singing at the same time. Right. But it's very hard to track two narratives going on and changing at the same time.
Yeah.
So if one person is doing like more wordy stuff, the other person should just ooze, ahs, nights.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, can we talk vocal harmonies for a second?
Yeah.
Because that's one of the things we love about Off Book. And now that we're in the room, we can ask like what sometimes, or you can sense it's coming, but how do you know who's going to hit what note?
Is I'm it? Almost it's always the melody.
Oh, there we go. There we go.
I mean, Zach grew up in choir being a tenor, so his ear is a million times more developed than mine, who was a soprano who always got to sing the melody. I've gotten way better in the last like 5 years as we've done a lot more musical improv together, but I would say most of the time I'm holding the melody. And then if I'm harmonizing, I'm pulling a real simple third.
Yeah. I mean, you can't, it's tricky. Like, other than just like holding the bass line over and over and over again, it's a lot of parallel. It's a lot of like me either jumping up above Jessica, below Jessica, and moving where she is. And I think you do end up singing more harmonies than you think these days.
Well, like, again, like all of this is to say none of these thoughts are actively happening. Sure. In
it's
the
just
moment.
Kind of like wild fly by, so you know, cool. Seat of our pants.
But we love tight harms.
We love them. They're great. I'm always really happy when I do one that is not just a parallel of what the melody is. That's different.
It's satisfying.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
It's also like I'm okay at singing. I'm good at singing harmonies. Mm. Like I take pride in that. Like that's just where my particular skill set lies.
Because it did singing.
Oh, thanks.
Support for this episode comes from Native. Listen, deodorant is not something you want to mess around with, but neither are the weird chemicals in conventional deodorants like aluminum and parabens. So Native uses a few simple ingredients like coconut oil and tapioca starch to make a super effective deodorant. This stuff keeps you dry and smelling clean no matter what you're doing. Yoga, running, sitting around listening to this show, which can get very intense, I know, and sometimes you just can't help but perspire. Charlie and I have been trying out the Native deodorants, and we are pleasantly surprised. I rocked the citrus and herbal musk flavor, and I immediately after we started running these ads, I had friends of mine, like the great Natalie, for instance, asking me, like, oh, does this work? Because, like, they've tried other natural deodorants and, like, they didn't really do anything for them. And I was like, you know what? This is pretty effective. I have rocked aluminums in my uneducated youth, and this is, like, equally effective. This keeps you smelling fine. It's kind of remarkable how long-lasting it is. Like, you don't have to sacrifice that security blanket that deodorant with all the horrible chemicals gives you. So Native makes a fragrance for everyone, from lavender and rose to eucalyptus and mint. But they also make unscented and baking soda-free formulas for those of us with sensitivities. And if you subscribe, you can get Native delivered every month or 2 months and save $2 a stick. So for 20% off your first purchase, visit nativedeodorant.com and use the promo code ONPOP during checkout. Plus, there's no risk to try it. Native offers free shipping and returns. So again, for 20% off your first purchase, use the promo code ONPOP at nativedeodorant.com. All right, what is your sock drawer looking like these days? If you have a whole bunch of stretched out holy socks, it's probably time for an upgrade. Head over to bombas.com/onpop to get fixed up with some new pairs and get 20% off your first order. Bombas socks come in hundreds of colors and styles and are made with comfort innovations like arch support, a seamless toe, and a cushioned footbed. In other words, super comfortable. Now, I have been a fan of Bombas for a while. I actually think that I first got hip to Bombas after hearing them advertised on a podcast. How crazy. And now I rock them all the time. I'm in it mainly for the comfort. I'm just all about that comfortable sock that you can put on and wear all day, and like at the end of the day it doesn't feel like your feet are dying. Bombas are like perfect for, you know, you're going to work and then you go after work, you're like, oh, I want to go on a hike, and then you go like out for drinks, da 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 da, and like you get home at the end of the day and your feet are feeling good. They're not too tight either. Bombas are, I don't know if other people are concerned about tightness of sock, but I am. I hate socks that are too tight. No bueno. But Bombas are right in the sweet spot. And don't forget, for every pair of socks you buy, Bombas will donate a pair to someone in need. And just in time for fall, Bombas has a new line of merino wool socks designed with all of Bombas's classic comfort features. So check them out at bombas.com/onpop today and get 20% off your first purchase. That's Bombas. That's bombas.com/onpop for 20% off. bombas.com/onpop.
I'm no you.
Okay, so we've had the opening number. We've had the I Want song. We've had the villain's entrance. We've had a sort of pop interlude.
Yeah, now's our favorite part. Comes right next.
Yeah. Can all these hey cafeteria workers?
Yeah.
Can you get in here for
oh,
a second?
Oh no, guys! What?
What? Are you late?
I'm late.
It's okay. Come in the door. You are here.
Okay, I was here on time.
I know. I'm counting you as on time.
I'm on time, everyone. I want everyone to know.
I've also been on time. I've also been on time.
Mary's on time too.
I've been on time. Yeah, I know, guys. You're all on time. Are you here?
Has the meeting? I'm just showing up now. Okay. So I'm late.
Okay. Well, I do have to say then.
Barnaby's late.
Barnaby is late.
That down.
But Stephen, you're on time.
Stephen was on time.
Mary's on time.
Mary's also on time.
All right. We can't go through this every time. In fact, in my head, I actually thought of this meeting as 12:15 because I thought at least 15 minutes we're going to talk about who's on time.
Okay, then Barnaby was on time.
Not you were.
Meeting doesn't start till 12:15. Then Barnaby was
you
on
were in my
time.
Head, so I feel like you should still count this as trying to do better about being on time.
Is this a meeting about how Barnaby's always late?
No, we wouldn't. I would do that in a much more calm one-to-one.
Thank you,
Barnaby. I wouldn't shame you in front of your colleagues.
I don't know. Life is hard.
I know. I'm not here to make it harder. I've made that abundantly. Haven't I made that perfectly clear?
No, you're doing great. You like the way that you always sort of like give people extra food even if they don't want it?
Well, yeah.
Or if they do want it and can't pay for it?
Yeah.
Life's already gonna rain on your parade. Why not make it an easier day? Oh no, oh no, I'm not here to make it hard.
Sometimes life kicks you out and you're very, very late, and there is some doubt as to when the meeting was starting, 'cause life is hard.
you get here too late to sit on the stool. So you stand by the stool and hope next time you're on the stool.
Hello, excuse me, I'm sorry, am I late?
Yeah,
you started the meeting without me?
Francois, you are late, and I mean, we were kind of starting the meeting, we were kind of starting like a prelude to the meeting.
Okay. Wait, so the meeting has not begun yet?
Well, it kind of had.
Okay.
I'm counting you late, but, you know, I'm not going to be mad about it.
Okay. The meeting has started and I am on time. Everyone knows that I am here. Do not worry about Francois, even though life is so hard.
Oh, it's like you were at the meeting the whole time.
Yes. Steven called me on speakerphone. I think he actually but dialed me and didn't even know. Oh, is that true? Yeah, you should hang up right now. Life is so hard. Sorry, I'm late.
Yeah, you are late.
I was supposed to bring all the rice and apples for the cafeteria. We were out of rice and apples.
Oh, thank you for getting that, Michael.
Oh, no, sorry. That's what I came to say. I didn't bring any rice or apples.
Michael, you're late and you didn't bring them?
Well, the distributor was late. Oh, sorry, I'm here now. I got the rice and apples.
Okay, I feel like this maybe is outside my purview. The distributor is here at the meeting?
Yeah, this guy ran away from me. Yeah, I ran away because he wasn't there and I just sort of left. Yeah, no, I was right behind you. You ran from me.
Try to start a meeting on time and be nice. You asked to start the meeting once or twice. Why do you all make it so hard? Why do you
and you
and you
and you
and you
and me
make my life so hard?
What did I miss?
Sounds like a palate cleanser. We don't want to be like adhering to the plot at every moment. Sometimes you just want to be in the world and meet some, especially I think because we're trying to live in a comedy podcast world.
Yeah.
We want to get away and do silly.
It's funs and games for a bit.
Funs and games
not involving any of the central characters from the musical. Sometimes they'll come back. Sometimes they won't.
So if we stick with The Little Mermaid, this is like Under the Sea or something.
This is Under the Sea. It's Les Poissons for sure.
Yeah, it's hard Les Poissons.
It's just like there's a crab in a pot and he's probably going to die.
But he doesn't.
Thank
and it's
God.
In the world and it's like calling back rice and apples, but it's not really plot driven.
Right.
Yeah, it takes place in the world, but it's sort of separate from the world.
I feel like in every musical, there's like this song. If you listen to like any soundtrack, like all the way through, it's kind of like main characters need to like take a breath and they have like supporting kind of like comic relief types that come out and sing like a wacky song. And it really doesn't drive the plot forward at all. Just sort of like a fun, weird song that can happen like maybe in the middle of the first act or maybe even sometimes like right when you come back from the second act. It's mm-hmm. like, I don't know,
brush
depends.
Up your Shakespeare.
Yeah, just there's always one. I mean, I don't want to say it's like my least favorite song of in a soundtrack, like listening through, but sometimes it can be like, I don't know.
I think just it's like less fun of a listen and more fun of a watch. Yes. Typically. Yes. It's probably going to be something musically simpler but watching it, it's probably, depending on how intense your story is, it's probably like a needed respite to kind of recharge. We can't just hit that one note
Would this be King George and Hamilton?
Yes, very exactly. So. Yeah.
Which we get three times.
Which is a great comedic runner. I mean, he's doing three beats. Comedy comes in threes. Like, I think the comedy and music pattern overlap is why this is so satisfying for our brains.
Yeah.
Is that we're like, oh yeah, we know they both are like pattern based and they're both secretly math.
I'll also say from like a comedy and improv perspective, it's nice to have characters where they don't alter the world too much. It gives you like a much longer leash with what you can do to them and what like who they are, what their backstory is, doesn't really matter so much. So like this guy can be like, oh, this is the butcher who just got his hand bit off by an alligator, and like that would be a big deal if he was the main character in a musical.
Yeah, we'd have to really deal with that.
We'd have to like deal with that.
But if it's the fifth guy late for the meeting, we could be like, yeah, all right, moving on.
I guess George is here and he has this alligator accident and that's not great, but whatever.
Yeah.
This is great. Because not only did you blow up the world by introducing a million characters, which I completely lost track of.
Sure.
But you also musically totally threw us threw us a bone where it's like, we're cutting out in the middle.
Yeah.
And it was extremely satisfying. If music is math, you've just broken my expectations. Yeah,
that's like Scott gets to mess with us by doing key changes. We get to mess with Scott by being like, stop, song, for a second.
Someone needs to enter. It's probably Francois.
I have a dumb joke and it's probably a French guy.
Yeah. No, you raise a good point. I mean, musicals are visual. They're song and dance. And so you have to, in doing a podcast, you have to kind of make up for that a little bit.
And I think you said something that I feel like we didn't necessarily ever state as a goal, where we were like, let's make sure we're world building type improvisers. Yeah. I think that's just something that Zach and I happened to both like doing and happened to both, you know, was a commonality that started our partnership, was like, you know, and also there should be like this random song where this or all this happens and there's like this world building and let's like lay on these specifics and let's not worry about, you know, let's build out the world. Let's be absurd and fast.
And then you imagine the choreography.
Yeah. Of course.
Oftentimes these songs are structurally very different too. We may have said this already, but these are often like rapid fire, not structurally musically, structurally like lyrically, like they will just be sort of a series of hurdles that Jess and I are setting up for each other and be like, and now list things in a, this fruit bowl, well, it has a lot, it's so many kinds of fruit. It's got bananas and peaches and oranges and grapes and melons, two melons, the melons, they are great. It also has persimmons and kiwis and ooh, so many different kinds of fruit.
I think that you named all the fruits. I cannot think of one single fruit, so I will say that also next there is a vegetable bowl. We have potatoes and radishes and celery and carrots. Too many carrots, I can hardly even bear it. We also have some Brussels and parsnips. Oh, a parsnip is like a radish, does the trick. It's spicy like a carrot and it grows like a root. But eat too much of those Brussels and they'll give you the toots.
And both bowls have tomatoes, cause no one knows where they go. Yeah, it's like that.
Well, that's, I love that too, cause it's like, that's maybe another difference between musical theater and pop. Like, in musical theater, it's so much about showing off lyrical dexterity,
yes,
creative rhymes, surprising kind of musical lyrical decisions. In pop, it's like, that's not only does it not, is it not invested in that, it's like, if you're too clever in a pop song, it's not good. It's not, it doesn't help anyone. It takes listeners out of the experience.
And I think that's because, I mean, with the exception of understanding that pop stars have persona, part of the appeal is that it's a real person and we have the benefit, or we have the difference of being from behind a character. So if a character is clever, we're not like mad at the, you know what I mean? We're like, that's that character.
If a person's clever,
I'm like, what are you trying to prove?
Who are you?
Yeah.
Who are you even?
But like a lyric, like very tiny, Sondheim wrote the lyrics for West Side Story. It was one of his like first big jobs. And when he has like the a very off-booking rap. I mean, and is that is to say we have a very, Sondheim rap, but like to say, I like the Isle of Manhattan, smoke on your pipe and put that in, is like, okay, that's that tiny like couplet, I think like hit musical theater for like 30 years because that wordplay. And also that's something that we're doing where the joke is second, you know, Manhattan's not the funny part. Smoke on your pipe and put that in is the funny part. So it has to go second. Like that line sucks if it's smoke on your pipe and put that in. That I like the island Manhattan. Like that's
a wild thing that would be.
Terrible.
Yeah.
Whereas in pop, you can have a hit song that goes everybody rock your body.
Yeah.
And that's like perfectly.
Backstreet is back, to be fair.
That's true.
Yes.
I mean, that doesn't like
ever go.
Not only does, that doesn't. You listen to that and you're like, oh, that's not a very creative rhyme, like tisk tisk. You're just like, oh yeah, this is beyond.
It's about
my intellect.
It's not about meaning. It's about, it's a feeling.
Because I feel like in pop music, I mean, sometimes you'll be struck by the poignancy of lyrics, but for me, it's like the lyrics, the voice is an instrument, and so it is just like the sound. Like my husband doesn't really like rap music, and when I saw Kendrick Lamar at FYF, I was like, you would love that. He just sounds like a drum. Like just like, if you didn't know what he was saying, the way that he is a human,
it's great to listen
to. Put words together, sounds like an instrument. Like it has like its own
sound. So that's interesting. Like maybe in some ways hip-hop and musical theater have more in common today than like hip-hop and, I mean, than musical theater and pop music. Do you?
Well,
I don't know.
You're boiling man more. Miranda, I think so. Yeah, I feel like the cheekiness of rhyme has started to make its way into musical theater.
Right on.
And I think like the cheekiness of rhyme is one of the best parts of hip hop. You know, like they're subverting expectations of rhyme all the time. They're like leaning into slants and you know.
I will say, in terms of what is closer to comedy, rap is by far the genre that has like the most quote unquote jokes baked into it. It's like The Lonely Island is walking a very fine line between like what is a song written to be a joke and like how many of their lyrics would not sound out of place in because I think like that's part of what makes good rappers good is that like the cleverness and funniness, and so that those two lines of comedy and rap are certainly closer together.
Okay, so we're talking about like defying expectations and what kind of
Gravity. Sorry.
Zach was thinking the same thing.
That was just for Dana.
It was for me.
We will sometimes end songs and just go because it's very funny to end a song.
So good. Are you familiar with Wicked?
I am not.
That's how Defying Gravity ends. It's just with Idina Menzel going.
Is this satisfying?
Have you never heard
Very
Defying
satisfying.
Gravity, Charlie?
No,
so satisfying.
It's great.
You gotta listen.
Oh my god!
Wow. We've done some fakey. Shark. We've called it back in a couple of musicals, where it just makes me so happy. I get so excited.
I know I've stolen like this thing a million times from that song.
That song,
Super Schwartz nonsense,
is
love it.
A tour de force performance by Idina Menzel. Yeah. So
we're gonna listen to it on the car.
Okay. Yeah. But you had a thing to say, and I totally derailed us from it. Which, by the way, welcome to what it is like to be Jessica and trying to do this podcast.
Very apropos because we have like gone in a thousand directions from our musical.
Yes.
And the thing that totally stunned me the first time I heard your show was that the whole thing connects and you bring things back from at the end where we go right back to the very beginning and everything sort of closes up. So my question to you is, do you know where we go next right now? Like, do both of you know exactly where we go?
No.
No, I think we both know that there's probably a couple options.
Okay.
And then one of us will make a move or the guest will make a move. But I feel like we would just, okay, so that song would end. You made my life. So, Oh, Curtis, I never see you here this late. Mm-hmm. I thought you were sleeping in the hospital director's room.
Oh, yes. I just have to lock some of the doors forever.
What?
I'm just going to kind of close this
Curtis.
One. This is an escape room now.
The hospital?
Oh, yeah, sorry. The whole thing is an escape room now.
And when were you going to tell the staff or the people who
they're sort of
come here?
Part of it. See, we couldn't legally take them out because they're blah, 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 patient's bill of rights. We have to let them be alive and on life support or whatever. But we need to make more money in this space, Barbara. Don't you understand? If we don't make more money, then how will the hospital director buy his second yacht?
Curtis.
He wants it very badly,
Curtis.
Barbara. He'll
Curtis.
Stop at nothing
you
to
can't
get it.
Possibly care about if he gets a second yacht or not. Has he ever let you on a yacht?
No.
Well, then why would it matter to you if he gets a second yacht?
I just want him to be happy. Don't you ever have someone that you care about, and even though they ignore you, even though they walk away from you down a hallway and they leave their trash behind in your hands, you still care about them and you don't know why? Don't you have that, Barbara?
Wow.
I bet you don't. What? I bet only I have that. But do you, Barbara?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I do.
A person you do anything for?
Yeah.
A person for whom you'd lock this hospital door?
No.
Even though it means a bunch of people are probably going to die, he's your special guy. Wouldn't you do that, Barbara? Are we the same?
No. I mean, yes, once in my life, I've been left with trash.
Right.
But I would never lock the hospital door. I would never do something so brash. And no, I know he wouldn't be worthy. He wouldn't be my special guy if it meant lots of people would die.
Sometimes love makes you do crazy things, like go into a hospital's finances and really just pull all the strings. and really just funnel a bunch of money into places it shouldn't be. But you do it for him.
No.
Because of the way he makes you feel. For your special guy. We're the same.
No.
You and I.
You can't let all these people die. Think what is good and think what is not. You can't care about a second yacht, a second ship away from the shore. Curtis, you have to want something more. You shouldn't put your heart in someone's hands if you don't care first or understand that lots of people will die.
Lots of people will die.
Lots of people will die.
You're my special guy.
Lots of people will die.
Lots of people will die,
and he can't be yours.
He is my
special guy. Curtis, stop! Don't put me in this room!
I'm just gonna put you
in Curtis!
The room.
Curtis!
Lock the door!
Curtis!
Just walk away from the cafeteria you locked her in. It's okay, she'll be fine. I'm sure she'll have lots of fun. We'll begin with her just hanging out in there, and everything will be okay. And then Curtis and his special guy will go on a special date. Cause he's your special. Cause he's your. Cause he's. Oh, I can't do it.
Back, Curtis, back, how's back, it going? Back,
back, back. Oh, hello, hospital director. I've locked all the doors.
Good.
Can I ask you a question?
Maybe. Ask it, and why then I'll decide if I'm going to act like it happened or
why
not.
Why have I never been on one of your yachts?
Well, I only have one, as you know.
If you had two, I'd definitely get to be on one of them, right?
I don't know. Probably not.
But they're really big, right?
I don't think
right?
you have the right kind of shoes.
What sort of shoes do you need?
You have to have white bottoms. You have to have white bottom shoes. You can't have any black bottom shoes. No, they're black bottom. It will scuff my ship.
What if I paint them white?
No, that's not the same.
What if
it's going to chip off.
Mayonnaise?
No, that's disgusting, Curtis.
Well, I don't know how to make the bottom of shoes white.
You buy white bottom shoes. You
wear shoes that have white on the bottom?
Yes, you imbecile. There's topsiders. They're Sperry's made exactly for being on the top of a ship. And if you don't have them, you can't be on my yacht. And I'm sure you don't have them.
I'm going to ask one more question.
Okay.
You're mean to me because you love me deep down, right?
Absolutely not.
Okay. I'll see you later.
Where are you going?
Just back to unlock a lot of doors here. He's not my special guy.
I knew it.
He's not my special guy. Because he's not my special guy. Barbara!
Yes?
I didn't see you in this cafeteria. I just had a delicious meal of fresh steamed rice and apples.
Well, that's great, Dr.
Thank you for
Sutton.
Making me take a break.
Oh, sure, yeah. No problem.
Is that the hospital director out there?
Oh, yeah.
I need to go have a word with him, but Barbara, this is the first time I have had a full stomach in days, and it's really making me think. I have never properly thanked you for all of the really wonderful things you've done for me.
Oh, well, I don't, you gave me that cookie on Nurses Appreciation Day.
Sure,
but thank
I
you.
Feel like a cookie on a day, literally when someone is supposed to appreciate you, is the bare minimum. I don't know if this is too forward, but outside of work, I'd like to, I don't know, take you out to dinner sometime. If that'd be okay.
Yeah. Could we go out for lunch?
Yeah, let's start with lunch.
Could we go out for lunch?
Sure.
I'd really prefer if we went out for lunch. Because I have a hunch.
You have a hunch.
That if we went out for lunch.
If we went out for lunch.
The date would extend into the night. And we could take a little walk. We could walk around a pond, and then maybe, yes, it's dinner time, and now, yes, we belong on a dinner date at a cafe, maybe a small table on a sidewalk, but I'm sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself.
No, you're not. You're saying a lunch that turns into dinner that turns into life. A lunch that turns into a dinner then into a life.
Sing along.
dinner into a lunch.
No more lonely nights.
A lunch that turns into a dinner, then into a life.
Hold on.
Before I do that, before we make our hearts both full, to secure our future first, I have to save this hospital.
And I knew that you would.
Hospital director.
Yes.
I need you to come with me.
Okay.
I've never met someone that I was more sure needed brain surgery.
Huh.
Clear room 3. Do you feel... I need you to answer a few questions.
Yes.
You feel angry all the time?
Yes.
You not know why?
Yes.
You feel like you need to hurt people all the time?
Yeah, and before my ski accident, I was a very nice man.
You were. I was thinking that. Everything changed after your ski accident. I think you may have something wrong with your brain. Do you mind if I just do some quick brain surgery?
Hmm.
It would be on me.
I think it would
be on... Yes, it would just be free. For me
free.
To do this brain surgery.
I like the sound of that.
Free surgery. Some would say gratis. I'm just saying you would not have to pay for this normally expensive brain surgery.
Ooh, 12 hours later.
Jesus Christ, I'm tired.
It takes a lot of time.
It sure does.
I hope you don't mind, but we brought you some snacks from the cafeteria, Dr. Sutton. I went up from rice and apples. I brought you some delicious mutton.
Oh gosh, I missed the Ren Faire, and I was so disappointed that I didn't get to have this mutton. Here, you are anointed, my favorite delivery guy.
Oh, thank you so much.
Do you work in the cafeteria?
I do, yeah.
Can I just say the people you work with are fucking nuts?
They make it really hard for me. Thanks
you
for
do a great
thank
job.
You for seeing me. Oh,
he's waking
coming.
Up. Hospital Director Klein, this is gonna be hard. The recovery process from surgery can take a long time. I want you to take it slow. What was that?
I was rubbing my eyes.
Oh, yeah, you sure were. Hold on, someone's also cleaning the window outside.
I'm sorry, I'll stop. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. You're just doing your job. How do you feel?
Can this possibly be true? Ooh, have you just helped me escape my doom? Ooh, ooh, ooh.
I want you to take it slow. You've avoided a fate most tragic, but this is a room that's safe. A room you won't need to escape.
Can it be true?
It's true.
You've helped me escape my doom.
In this room.
Can you believe I've escaped my doom and now I'm free? It's like you
I'm sorry, hospital director, there's somewhere I got to be. I'm prioritizing things that are important to me.
And let me do the same, I'll thank you forevermore. Now please, Curtis, come in from the door.
I was here the whole time.
I can always rely on you.
Wanted to make sure you were fine.
One more to join me for lunch. I'll have an iced tea and, gosh, I think maybe he'll have an iced tea.
Barbara.
How were those 12 hours?
I'm so sorry I'm late.
No.
No, being late is rude and it can really derail things if you do it all the time.
Honestly, I kind of had a buffer of 15 minutes in my head.
Did you get a nice tea?
I got you one.
That's perfect. I love iced tea.
Me too.
What are the chances?
I just kind of felt like... This table was missing tea. Something was missing for you and me.
I know an appetizer that I think might be nice. Do you mind if I order
an apple?
Nothing's missing. You did it.
Nothing to add.
That's magical. At the beginning of the, at the very beginning, you said you may or may not be human. I'm convinced not.
Yeah.
That is magical.
Oh, truly, thank you.
I'm mystified.
I mean, we're just having a good time.
You have a good time in a very unique, idiosyncratic, yeah, strange way.
Yes, yes.
And worth mentioning, Jessica and I have done... Many. Thousands of hours.
This is your first time.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, sorry. Many hours of tennis. This is our first musical we've done. Is this how it go?
Is this a thing?
Do it go like that?
Well, I'm really glad you did that because I felt like we were going on and on and you just took us through the whole rest of the musical. What happened?
Yeah, I feel like there, we did get to a point where we're like, okay, well now maybe we'll momentum through and because we want to chat and
chat more with y'all.
So, but yeah, that's basically, you know, you just start putting people together. So like you said, you know exactly what the next move is. No, I mean, it could have been Dr. Sutton with the villain, the hospital director. It could have been, someone like breaking off from the cafeteria. It could have been Curtis with the doctor. It could have been lots of things. Let's get the non-protagonist together. Let's appeal to, I think appealing to a henchman is sort of a trope. Mm. Understanding why Curtis would be so aligned with such an evil guy and trying to understand what that is maybe something fun to explore.
Yeah, I think we really like the idea that our villains are complicated. They're not like, we have these ideas of like good and evil and like we look at like these people are evil but no one, I don't think anyone is the villain in their own story. Everyone thinks they're doing things for the right reasons.
Right. You had a ski accident.
Or you had a ski accident and it's like, sometimes you need a quick ending. I mean, that was really interesting to me because I was like, okay, we started doing surgery. How do we bookend this musical by ending with surgery again? Maybe we'll get back to like actually being inside a brain. Maybe we'll not. I mean, the idea of the sort of like bookends, it's less important than how technically you hit all of those things that happen.
And we're looking for comedic callbacks and musical callbacks.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, improv training and also musical theater structure where, you know, when you hear a finale, you're going to hear motifs from earlier in the musical.
And like something, so talking about things we're missing was like the most powerful, like emotional peak we had had so far. Actually, what was the opening chorus? I was trying to remember it.
This is an opening number.
This is an that's why we couldn't bring it back.
Well, we could have said, this is a closing number. Right.
Yeah.
But when I was asking that question, so you didn't know where the plot was going to go, but you had a sense of like the direction out, like we had to, the conflict had been set up and you kind of had a sense of where a musical is going to go.
I think in the same way that you are, if you're watching, you know, any movie and the good guys are like sailing on a ship and there's half an hour left in the movie and you know that the bad guys also have a ship, like I can tell you what's gonna happen. Like the bad guy ship is gonna shoot at the good guy ship and it's probably gonna look like everything is real bad until it's not. And if you know there were a cloud of parrots in act one that it's like, God, I love those cloud of parrots, they're such a harbinger of goodwill, like they're probably gonna swoop in and save us on when it gets choppy. So do we know what's going on? No, but to like, we don't have the mental
space to actually think of plot moves in advance, really, particularly when Jess and I are doing just shows by ourselves, because it's really like I can't not listen to anything she says because that's she's only got I am her entire support line here.
Right.
But do we kind of know? I mean, like, yeah, anyone.
I think people who know, like, the hero's journey know kind of what's going to happen. And we like the shows that we have that break the rules a little bit more, that tell slightly different stories. And if it wasn't the two of us, and maybe we would have built out like a bigger cast of characters where we had more wants that needed to happen. But, you know, we have wants and we have obstacles, and that's basically like going to be our spine. So we're going to see some of those wants happen and some of them not. And we're going to have people collide, and then that's a story.
Oh, yeah.
It's a story.
And then there's redemption at the end. I mean, if you're singing, it has to be redemptive.
This is a very funny. I'm like a painfully happy ending driven.
I have osmosed that from. There was a period of time in our first like 10 episodes, I was sort of on a mission to see if I could kill everyone, and I never did.
One time I like aggressively no-anded him. I was like, and they're all in heaven, and it's still okay. And people definitely called out. They're like, Jess will not let it end sad. That doesn't mean that like everything is perfect and resolved and like everything is cheery, but yeah, when you're making up a song, it's a little, for me, I think it's just harder for me to access the material to make it up if it's not like,
I don't think I want to do a downer.
I just don't want to do it. So
there's enough downer in the world.
Yeah. Amen. Like, so it's just, it's gonna be like, that's my wheelhouse, that's like my personal well, that's easier for me to access than if it was like, and that's how healthcare works. Like, if that were the end of that, yeah. I mean, sure, that might like have a place in this world, but that's not.
We don't that's really. Not we my... don't. We don't have a lesson to teach here. Yeah, we're idiots who make up songs.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, I mean, Charlie, you came in here as a musical neophyte. Now, presumably, you know everything there is to know about the history, form, and structure of the American musical. Are there any lingering questions we can answer for you before we wrap this up?
I definitely learned a lot about the musical. Like, I feel like I have a clearer sense of the structure. I'm still, it's one of these things where sometimes when you know the magic trick, the magic is that much better. It's such an honor to get to see you all do your work.
Oh, gosh. Thanks.
It's so fun, too. I'm just like, I'm excited to see where the song is going, and I have no idea where it's going, and neither do you. So I had so much fun with this. I think the lingering question I have is that, you know, Nate and I have been doing this podcast for 5 years. We break down music. It's fun. It's a lot of fun. But if we wanted to launch off into the world of making improvised musicals, where do we begin? Or is it just like, it's too late?
No.
Never too late. I mean, I think improv training meets music knowledge makes for the strongest player. But there are great players who kind of only have one of those sides. Like, you know, they have a more built up right arm than left arm or whatever. Mm-hmm. They come from a lot of improv training and have like a great comedic mind and maybe don't know the musical theater tropes that they're pulling. And like that, the music part is purely intuitive for them.
Yeah.
You know, Zach and I started doing musicals when we were children and did them for years and years and years, and then both found improv comedy about like our early teens and now have been doing. So, I mean, we have
our careers took left turns.
So much like of the time has been uniquely positioned to put us like doing this. But I think if you're interested in improv comedy, to like study that and take classes and then just listen to some soundtracks just to understand the palette that you're playing with. Obviously, rules are made to be broken, but I think it's super helpful to have some musical theater reference point, just because it is different than pop music to hear a character sing and describe their wants and their desires and maybe lay out plot isn't something you're gonna know from just like, oh, I listen to music. It's a different kind of song structure.
Yeah, because someone's gonna start an opening that is Cell Block Tango, and it is very atypical of a musical improv opening. And if you don't know what Cell Block Tango is, it's gonna be like, why are people whispering disparate words?
And why are people getting laughs from sitting in a chair backwards? Yeah. Like, I think because also Zach and I are like comedians, we want all those laughs. So you know, the reference point, we don't want to be reference led or restricted by reference, but to make a referential, you shouldn't not have that potential.
It's all paint to paint.
Yeah,
with.
Exactly.
You want that tool in your belt.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, Nate, I'll see you in improv class.
All right.
Hell yes.
We didn't get any avant-garde music. There's nothing, there's no atonal music.
Oh.
No.
I mean, you guys want to improvise a quick 12-tone real fast? I just didn't jump around a bit.
I'm trying to think what even would play with that. Sondheim does a little bit, but still falls back into...
It's so hard. I think if we intentionally came in aiming at Sondheim, we'd probably do it, but we would never, I think, arbitrarily choose that horribly confusing genre. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't think so. Yeah. And again, like,
I mean, we got pretty close with some of the cats, like,
yeah. Scott plays differently when there's no, yeah, like, he can give us harder stuff.
Oh, this is great. That's a beautiful.
I am a ghost.
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 I'm trying to justify, like, why I would sing a song like that. That's the reason, is if I was a ghost.
But I mean, that is the nice thing, is that if the right guest comes in and is like, and the ghost that only sings in 12 tone, then they're endowed.
It doesn't work because I need all my expectations to be set up, and I'm just too lost in atonal music.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of.
I will say 90% of what I'm doing is predicting where they're going next. Where they're like, and I'm going to, and I'm like, I hope you sing that note again, and they do, or they go, it's hard to sing, and I'm like, oh shit, all right, but we'll figure it out.
It makes it fun for Brett, because then Brett is now trying to follow Scott, who is following us.
I always like telling Dana the key.
Brett. Yeah. Tell me. Yeah. You're like C. I'm like, oh, I'm ready.
I can generally make out the root, and then I know when the five is coming back. There's a lot of ways to go from one to five.
There's a high-tech version of the show where you guys have mics every time that only talk to each other.
Oh, yeah. That's my next step.
Yes, that's it.
This has been switched off book, the Switched on Pop off book.
And
are you guys going to play some music?
Be right back after this break.
Be right back after this break.
We're going to take a little break, and then we're going to do some more.
We'll do more.
Okay. Make some sounds.
Yeah.
All right.
But this is the end of the formal Switched off book.
Yes.
Everything that comes after this, it's the no man's land. Welcome back to
the No Man's Land.
Welcome back to the No Man's Land.
Oh no, we're gonna keep having fun with Switched Off Book. So we have
we got Charlie on the mandolin. Yes, that's what that is.
Ooh, I love Amanda.
Oh, yeah.
We got Nate on the bottom half of the keys, top half.
Top half, baby.
Scott on the bottom half of the keys.
Ooh.
So tell me, this is now your turn to educate me.
Yeah.
We're gonna improvise a bluegrass song. What are the sort of staples, lyrically speaking, of a tone like? Of a bluegrass song.
Yeah. Bluegrass is known for what they call the high lonesome sound. Charlie and I used to play a lot of bluegrass back in the day. So it's the high lonesome sound. It's usually involving it's usually some kind of tale of woe, but then there's a catharsis in the chorus, so it's like maybe you're in jail, no one's going to pay your bail.
Great, that's all I need to know.
All right, you got the gist. Yeah.
Sometimes there's trains. There's a lot of trains.
Yeah, there's a lot of trains.
Good.
I am a lighthouse.
Yeah.
Warm by the weather and the wind.
You're a train. You're supposed to be a train.
I'll show
you how to do it. So this is our segment. It's called
Bluegrass.
So blue, so grass.
One, two, three. Just a train sitting in train jail. No track to roll for me. I was just a train sitting in train jail. No freedom, can't you see?
I was just a train sitting in train jail. Wondering what will become of me. I'm just a train sitting in train jail. Wondering when I will be free. But then you came in. Choose me, and now I'm loosey. You came and choose me, and now I'm loosey.
I was just a plane sitting in plain jail on the tarmac, grounded here. No flight attendants on me, giving peanuts to the passengers and beer.
Jail, delayed for heaven's knows.
But you their names, you will see they're all Transformers and they're all the same. Because the plane was a train all along, and the train was also a bike.
And the bike was a bus, and the bus was a car.
Is that how you do it? That's how they go?
Nailed it.
That's an old-time classic.
They're all in jail. Oh, wow. That was amazing. What a true joy to cross over two music pods. Give it up to Switched on Pop.
And this has been Off Book. And it's together, the Transformers. Guess what Transformers are? Two vehicles that combine from another vehicle. I've seen it. That's how it goes. This has been Switched Off Pop Book, or some of those words altogether. You can find Switched On Pop all the places where podcasts are.
Every place the podcast exists.
That's right. So if you're listening, if you're an Off Book fan and you're like, wait, this was so fun.
Yeah.
Listen to them dissect and pull the curtain back on pop music.
On pop music. It's really great.
Similarly, if you are enjoying listening to this beautiful musical, which we will obviously have the whole score for. I mean, it's all composed ahead of time,
we'll make Scott write it out.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Well, that'll be available. Thank you, Scott. Go back, binge all of the episodes. You invite the best comedians in the business onto your show. It is so much fun. It's the most enjoyable.
Thank you so much.
Give it up for Brett on the guitar, Scott on the keys, Dana on the drums, Nate also on the keys.
A little busy.
Charlie on the mandolin.
Okay. Mandolin solo, take us home. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.